Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we hear from time to time news from the land of 4,000 princes, our freedom-loving friends in Saudi Arabia. We hear most recently about their plans to kind of de-emphasize oil, petroleum, in their economic fortunes going forward. Among those steps is a new city, a city of the future, NEOM, N-E-O-M. It's not looking quite so glamorous yet, just yet, according to Business Insider. A wave of vloggers, I said vloggers, and micro-influencers have been posting on social media about their lives in the still-developing desert city. Hey, Palm Springs worked. And their posts are kind of falling flat. It's a $500 billion project championed by Prince Mohammed bin Salman, Mohammed bin Bonesaw, as the centerpiece of his Vision 2030 plan to diversify the country's economy. It builds itself as, quote, a land of the future where the greatest minds and best talents are empowered to embody pioneering ideas and exceed boundaries in a world inspired by imagination, unquote. Government hoped that NEOM's megacity called The Line, Tom?
The Line.
Yeah. Which would be a long, thin city between tall, mirrored skyscrapers, would draw 1.5 million residents by the end of this decade. That goal has since been reduced to about 300,000. Well, that's doable. Then there's the reality of what living in NEOM currently looks like. Some vloggers have been sharing experiences about living there in recent months. Sarah has more than 24,000 TikTok followers. Aida has more than 28,000. The surroundings in their videos look dreary, despite the vloggers' smile-filled promotions. A journalist for ABC News, oh no, not ABC, they fact-check. Matt Bevin wrote in a piece on X that has been viewed more than 770,000 times. Quote, oh wow, this looks great. I've always dreamed of living in an industrial estate on the surface of the sun. Unquote. Others on the platform described sites in NEOM as being, quote, joyless and dreary, looking like a Mars colony. Hello, Elon. And having low security prison vibes. Those are quotes. In May, the BBC reported that Saudi authorities had been given permission to kill any local villagers who stood in the way of eviction orders in order to clear the region for development. According to the BBC, one villager was shot and killed after protesting. Hey, can't make the city of the future without killing the past. More recently, NEOM executives have been accused of your racism, your misogyny, and your corruption. That's according to the Wall Street Journal a few days ago. There have also been reports of chaos and feuds, even a physical brawl between bosses working on the project. And all this while, costs for NEOM keep rising. Who would have thunk it? That has led the Saudi authorities to consider recalibrating the project, have become a cause for concern within the Saudi government. Free bone saws for every new resident? No, not yet. Hello, welcome to the show.
Nobody wins this race we run, this hedonistic marathon, where creature comforts offer none. We're either take it with a grain of salt. The haves and the have-nots, gestalt. It's always someone else's fault. Have a little mercy. With such impressive pedigrees, coordinating refugees. But who needs foes with friends like these? We cut and then we curtsy. We sit here on the tallest stack, begrudging these few things we lack. But who will make us give them back? Have a little mercy.
From the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. I just looked it up. Welcome to today's edition of the show now.
Looks like Musk love.
Well, you probably saw the headline story this week. Elon Musk, who had been kicked out of Brazil, or his X platform, social platform, had been kicked out of Brazil. Ordered to shut down because it wouldn't comply with rulings by the Supreme Court in that country to deplatform certain offensive posts. Late this week, on Friday, as a matter of fact, he gave in. He'll do everything the Supreme Court of Brazil says, as long as he's allowed back in the country, because it's his second largest market after the United States, I guess. I think that's what it said. So I guess that's good news for Elon is back in business in Brazil. Back in business in Brazil. But meanwhile, radio waves from his growing network of satellites are blocking scientists' ability to peer into the universe. That's according to researchers in the Netherlands, reported by the BBC. The new generation of Starlink satellites, they provide fast internet service around the world, or as Wolf Blitzer says, around the world, are interfering more with radio telescopes than earlier versions, according to the researchers. That would be your backward progress. The thousands of orbiting satellites are blinding radio telescopes and may be hindering astronomical research, according to the Netherlands Institute for Radio Astronomy, the Astron. SpaceX, which owns Starlink, has not replied to a request from the BBC for comment. The satellites provide broadband internet around the world, often in remote places, including challenging environments like Ukraine and Yemen. They're also used to connect remote areas of the UK to fast internet. A couple of years ago, tests showed Starlink could deliver internet speeds four times faster than the average. But astronomers say this comes at a cost. Quote, every time more of these are launched with these kind of emission levels, we see less and less of the sky, said the director of Astron. Quoting her again, Professor Jessica Dempsey, quoting, we're trying to look at things like the jets, which are emitted from black holes in the center of galaxies. We also look at some of the earliest galaxies, billions and millions of light years away, as well as exoplanets, unquote. She's highlighting the areas the satellite radiation is affecting. Elon? Interference from the second generation of satellites was found by Astron to be 32 times stronger than the first generation. That's what we call progress. The amount of radiation emitted exceeds regulations set by the industry body, the International Telecommunications Union. One estimate suggests there are more than 6,400 Starlink satellites currently in orbit, around 340 miles above Earth. So it's the largest provider by far. The satellites are relatively large. SpaceX's main competitor, OneWeb, has fewer than 1,000, but it is a growing business area. Amazon is developing its own network, hopes to launch at least 3,000 in the next few years. By 2030, the number of satellites in the orbit around Earth is expected to surpass 100,000. Yeah, there used to be stars up there. Many objects in space, including distant galaxies and planets, emit light on the electromagnetic spectrum. It's my favorite spectrum. This radiation travels like waves, and radio telescopes can pick up on those waves. That allows us to get a picture of things we can't see with our eyes. And it's those waves that are being disturbed by the satellites. The scientists found unintended electromagnetic radiation from almost all of the version 2 Starlink satellites. It was about 10 million times brighter than that from the weakest sources of light identified. Those might be from distant planets or other things. Said the lead author of the study, it was like comparing, quote, the faintest stars visible to the naked eye and the brightness of the full moon. He adds, since SpaceX is launching about 40 second-generation Starlink satellites every week, this problem is becoming increasingly worse. Unquote. But wait, there's more, Musklove. The leader of Chechnya, that's a once breakaway province of Russia, ain't breaking away anymore. Ramzan Kadyrov is his name. He's accused Elon Musk of remotely disabling his Cybertruck, which had been sent to the front line of Russia's war in Ukraine. Kadyrov claimed this week the vehicle, which he said had been outfitted with a machine gun and was performing well in combat, had been shut down. He had sent two additional Cybertrucks to the front line. The warlord, known for his loyalty to Putin and his active involvement in Russia's ongoing military operations in Ukraine, shared footage of himself a couple months ago driving a Cybertruck, claimed it was a gift from Musk. That's got to be the ugliest gift you've ever received, bud. In the video, a smiling Kadyrov was shown driving through an empty square in Grozny, the capital of Chechnya, and thanking Musk for the vehicle, soon to be sent to the front. In his quote, Musk firmly denied sending it. Quote, are you seriously so retarded that you think I donated the Cybertruck to the Russian government? That's what he wrote at the time on X. Kadyrov repeated his claim earlier this week as he lamented that the high-tech, if exceedingly ugly, vehicle had to be towed from the battlefield. What towed it probably looked What Elon Musk did was not nice, said Kadyrov. He gives expensive gifts from the heart and then remotely switches them off. The remaining two are still active on the front line. Kadyrov said, quote, you couldn't get better advertising for the Cybertruck, unquote. Unless the ad didn't include a picture of the vehicle. Oh, and now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
You probably know that the nations in the vicinity of Japan were a little bit miffed, a little bit upset about Japan's plan, now put into effect, I think, to dump toxic irradiated water from the Fuuk plant into the ocean, you know, where it could float around to different countries. The wastewater resulted in Beijing's ban on Japanese seafood. Japan's Prime Minister Kishida said the two sides this week reached a, quote, certain level of mutual understanding that China will start working on easing the import ban and will join the expanded monitoring of wastewater discharges from Fuuk under the framework of the UN. Last year, about a year ago, Japan discharging treated radioactive wastewater from the plant, and China blocked imports of Japanese seafood. Quote, naturally, our understanding is China will steadily resume the imports of Japanese marine products, said Kishida. Japanese officials described the deal as a breakthrough. There was no immediate word on when a next monitoring visit will take place or when exactly the ban will be lifted. But it was a nice show. Dateline Spokane, some 2,000 gallons of low-level liquid radioactive waste are set to be shipped from the Hanford site in Richland, where we made all our plutonium, or most of our plutonium, during World War II. That's going to happen next year. They might be passing through Spokane, where my parents once lived, part of a $17 million United States Department of Energy project called the Test Bed Initiative. The pretreated waste is going to be transported as a liquid from the Hanford site to disposal facilities in Utah and Texas. Enjoy the liquid, Utah and Texas. Once in these locations, the waste will be further processed in grout and disposed of in a way that does not pose a risk to any groundwater systems, as the waste does now to the Columbia River. The project has been in the works for years. In 2017, 3 gallons of waste were treated and grouted before being sent to Texas. Following that success, quotes, the department plans to attempt transferring a higher volume of waste as a liquid, maybe even 6 gallons? No, now we're enlarging it to a 2,000-gallon demonstration project to show how we can do this on a larger scale, said the spokesman for the Department of Energy. Everyone who spoke to the Spokesman Review, the newspaper in Spokane, agreed removing the waste from Hanford was a step forward. Many expressed concerns about transporting the radioactive material in liquid form, said the head of the cleanup watchdog organization, Heart of America Northwest. Says, quote, moving waste to be disposed in a place like Texas, where there is no groundwater to be contaminated, would be a great opportunity. But we should be making sure the waste is shipped as a treated solid. We are very concerned the waste will be the first test of 2,000 gallons is being shipped as a liquid, unquote. Him. The state of Oregon shared similar concerns at a public meeting last month, specifically stating it believes waste should be solidified before transportation. I, representing Oregon, do not think it's a good idea to ship liquid radioactive waste across our roads, said the Assistant Director for Nuclear Safety in the Oregon Department of Energy. He continued, I think it's riskier, and I think there are better ways to ship waste off-site. Dateline St. Louis, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, is involved in some nuclear nonsense. They this week revealed new signs that would be going up at property where low-level radioactive materials are known to exist. 196 warning signs going up along Coldwater Creek in St. Louis will go up with the property owner's permission, going up a couple of months from now. The Missouri Collection for the Environment says the signs focus mainly on subsurface risks, overlooking surface-level contamination. They also lack universal warning symbols and use potentially misleading technology like, quote, low-level, unquote. Nuclear waste contamination from World War II and Cold War-era activities has affected 19 locations across the country, several sites concentrated in the St. Louis area. Between 1942 and 57, Mallinckrodt, a St. Louis company, produced uranium for the Manhattan Project. The resulting nuclear waste was initially stored in hundreds of thousands of drums. Can't you hear the drums? And was buried near St. Louis Airport. Hot place to fly into. The waste was eventually relocated. Some transported to Colorado, the remainder distributed between a landfill and another landfill. A portion of that waste leaked from both one of the landfills and the airport location, contaminating Coldwater Creek. July of last year, newly released government documents revealed the officials were aware of the risks posed by radioactive waste to residents near the creek as early as 1949. Despite this knowledge, federal authorities consistently minimized the potential dangers, describing the risks as minimal or low level. Is that federal officials from the Army Corps? Doesn't say. But they're putting up the signs. Let them try. How long does it take to decommission a nuclear plant? Try 95 years. Residents on the Somerset coast of England are being asked for their views on how the former nuclear power station, the Hinkley Point B facility, should be safely decommissioned. It ceased operations a couple years ago after cracks developed in the plant's graphite cores, creating potential safety concerns. The owner of the facility has applied to the Office of Nuclear Regulation for formal permission to decommission the site, which, as I say, could take about 95 years. Could be commissioned in three phases. The three phases of Eve are not involved in this. The third and final phase will see the former reactor and debris vaults being dismantled and removed, and any final landscaping work being completed. The consultation with local residents is running through December. The company that owns the plant that's being decommissioned, Hinkley Point B, is now building Hinkley Point C. That'll be decommissioned for another 95 years, somewhere after it's completed in June of 2027, costing about $61 billion. It's expected to generate enough electricity to supply 6 million homes for the next 60 years. The sixes are wild. And Dateline Washington, the U.S. nuclear power regulator, said this week, inspections found issues at the Palisades nuclear reactor in Michigan that the owner wants to restart. Holtec, which usually buys plants to shut them down, wants to restart it after a two-year closure with $1.5 billion in U.S. money, government money. As I say, Holtec wanted to decommission it, but now it wants to reopen Palisades late next year because there's a surge in U.S. power demand. From where? From artificial intelligence and cryptocurrencies and electric vehicles. It would be the first time a shuttered U.S. nuclear plant reopened. Clean, cheap, safe, too. Safe to reopen our friend the atom.
The leaves of brown came tumbling down, remember. In September, in the rain, the sun went out just like a dying ember. That September, in the rain, to every word of love I heard you whisper. The raindrops seem to play a sweet refrain. Though spring is here, to me it's still September. That September in the rain.
Direct from Mar-a-Lago, the world's most beautiful resort where people pay too much. The elite meet to eat and meet me. I'm your favorite ex and future ex-president, with another edition of Truth Social Radio, brought to you by Trump Trousers, the pants to wear when baggy's not big enough. This week, get ready to get scared, really scared, because I'm going to reveal something really scary about a very scary person, a person I call Camacula. Maybe you notice my opponent in this race has very red lips, and equally maybe you thought to yourself, okay, that's too much lipstick, but lots of women who aren't my type do that. Except maybe it's not lipstick, but blood. People have been telling me for years about a cult in San Francisco where leftists and Marxists and fascists drink human blood. It sounds hard to believe, but so did Dr. Hannibal Lecter, and you know how that turned out. Maybe they're not really vampires, so at least they get a good night's sleep. But what if Camacula's in an important meeting with my friend Vladimir Putin or my other friend from North Korea, Kim Chi? All of a sudden, in the middle of the meeting, she starts drinking blood, or even worse, their blood. How does that make our country look? Like a failing nation? Or if they're at the United Nations, it makes New York look like the vampire state. I'll be more than glad to take a test to prove that all the blood in my body is mine. Would Camacula agree to take the same test? Many people tell me she wouldn't. Most of the fake news are attacking Trump for my support of Mark Robinson for governor of North Carolina. He may have said some unpopular things, but I can tell you for the next best thing to a fact that he doesn't drink human blood. And unlike Camacula, he really is black. Thanks for listening.
Trump Social Radio is also brought to you by Trump Dentures. Sink your teeth into life.
Do you remember the 21st night of September? Love was changing the mind of this pretender while chasing the clouds away. Our hearts were ringing in the key that our souls were singing. As we danced in the moonlight, the stars stole the night away. Do you remember him? Dancing in September and Adi, 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 dance the night away. Dance the night away. Thoughts are with you, holding hands with your heart, but to see you, only blue talk in your December's. Remember when love was here to stay? Dancing in September, September, love was changing the mind of this pretender, chasing the clouds away.
From Santa Monica, this is the show. Had to look it up. And now, ladies and gentlemen, some news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. I don't know if you are aware of it, but there's a big legal case unfolding in Reno, Nevada this week and probably in the week to come as well. It hasn't been in the news because it's been sealed. The irony is that it involves Rupert Murdoch and his family and the fate of News Corp, Nice Corp. The old guy, I'm sorry, he's only 93, was in downtown Reno this week to make the case to a probate commissioner why his trust should be altered. That's what he wants to do, to give more control of the Fox Corp and News Corp enterprises to his oldest son, Lachlan, who just coincidentally happens to be the only one of his children who agree with his political slant. The existing terms of the will would have split the stuff among all of the kids, including James, who's turned into somewhat of a liberal, or at least a middle-of-the-roader. As you know, Rupert's property bag includes the Wall Street Journal and Fox News Channel. The evidentiary hearings are closed to the public most documents have been sealed, which is why it's happening in Nevada. Nevada allows for these matters to be sealed upon petition. Nevada is one of the more favorable states as it relates to privacy and confidentiality, says an attorney who specializes in probate. The news media, not amused by the irony, have filed suit to open the thing up. Quote, Rupert Murdoch may be elderly, but he's far from vulnerable and there are extensive legitimate interests in much of the information surrounding this dispute, said one of the lawyers for the coalition of news media. Even if journalists ultimately triumph in their fight to access more information about the case, he fears it will only come after the Murdoch case is resolved, rendering it moot, or as he calls it, a travesty. It's nice people doing nice things. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Interim Columbia University President Katrina, sorry about that, Armstrong apologized in her first interview with the school newspaper this week to those who were hurt by the New York Police Department's sweeps of the Gaza Solidarity Encampment last April and occupied Hamilton Hall, during which police made over 200 arrests. The school newspaper asked the school president whether she agreed with the former university president, Minouche Shafik's decision to authorize the NYPD to enter campus twice. That resulted in the largest mass arrests at Columbia since protests on campus way back in 1968. Quote, I know this is tricky for me to say, but I do understand that I sit in this job, right? And so if you could just let everybody know who was hurt by that I'm just incredibly sorry. And I know it wasn't me, but I'm really sorry. I saw it, and I'm really sorry. The university faced intense criticism from students, faculty, politicians, and free speech organizations following the April 18th sweep of the encampment, which the previous president authorized less than 2 days after protesters pitched tents on a lawn. The NYPD chief of patrol said during a press conference following the arrests that, quote, the students who were arrested were peaceful and offered no resistance whatsoever, unquote. Let's go to the entertainment world now, shall we? Eric Roberts once claimed responsibility for his sister Julia Roberts' career. Now he's publicly retracting that statement. In his new memoir, I bet it's out now, the prolific character actor apologizes to his sister for saying he made her famous. Quote, now one of the things I'd like to apologize for in this book is for publicly saying on more than one occasion, if it weren't for me, there would be no Julia Roberts, he writes. That's not only unfortunate, but it's also untrue. And I hope Julie will accept this more public apology. It was an asinine thing to have said. I was proud of her, but it was pride turned on its head to my own advantage. He notes that Julia could have easily succeeded without his intervention. Quote, she's a very driven woman, unquote. Eric Roberts. After drawing Swifty ire, that's ire from Taylor Swift's fans, Zach Bryan knows the dangers of drinking and posting all too well. The country music star released a lengthy apology this week after receiving backlash for a post on X, where he stated that Ye, formerly Kanye West, is better than Taylor Swift. In the short X post, he said this week, the Philadelphia Eagles are better than the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the team where Swift's boyfriend, Travis Kelce, plays. The singer has since deactivated his X account, but on Thursday he took to his Instagram account to apologize for the message. Quote, for the record, guys, I wasn't coming for Taylor the other night. I was drunkenly comparing two records, and it came out wrong. I know there's a lot of stuff that clouds around Ye, and I was speaking purely musically. I love Taylor's music and pray you guys know I'm human and tweet stupid things often. Hope one day I can explain this to her. Twitter gets me in trouble too much, and I'd say it's best if I stay off it. I'm sorry to any Taylor fans I ticked off or let down. Unquote. Now to Canada, the University of Ottawa's special advisor on anti-Semitism has resigned after fewer than 3 months in the role. He says his social media posts about the deadly device explosions around Lebanon had hurt people and affected his ability to do that job. Arthur Wilczynski, he's a senior advisor at the university's Graduate School of Public and International Affairs, and a decorated former senior public servant, posted and replied several times on X as the attacks broke out this week. These are the attacks on the portable electronic devices carried by members of Hezbollah, among others. 20 people were killed, 450 wounded in the second attack on walkie-talkies. Israel has neither confirmed nor denied its involvement. It's widely believed that intelligence officials from that country were responsible for the attacks. Wilczynski drew anger online for characterizing what happened as brilliant, posting, quote, "Today's targeting of Hezbollah operatives was brilliant. It struck a major blow against a terror group that has fired thousands of rockets against civilians, all while the useless UN mission in Lebanon stands by," unquote. He later said, same evening, by brilliant he meant the sophistication involved in planning, adding, quote, "The loss of innocent lives in any conflict is abhorrent and must be avoided," unquote. He also posted a clapping GIF in reply to a post about both the planning involved in the attacks and the widespread injuries. His first post the next day, Thursday, was to say he was resigning as advisor. Quote, "I believe in accountability. My posts on the Hezbollah-Israel war caused harm and affected my ability to help combat anti-Semitism at the University of Ottawa. My intent in sharing is irrelevant when it's clear many were hurt by them. I apologize. I resigned as special advisor on anti-Semitism." Unquote. The Getty Museum in Los Angeles this week found itself having to apologize for the explosion event by an artist, Kei Guo Qiang, at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. It left several people injured by falling debris and many others shaken by the sound and the smoke. Quote, "We're aware of a few people who were hit by some kind of falling debris, and it was really loud, and we're really sorry there were people who were freaked out by how loud and smoky it was," says Catherine Fleming, president of the Getty Trust. She says appropriate procedures had been followed for stadium events, and city officials had been notified in advance. The fireworks display, like a week ago, was, according to Getty's news release announcing it, to recall the myth of Prometheus's theft of fire from the gods. It marked the start of PST Art, a $20 million Getty-funded museum collaboration, which is focused this year on art and science. The Getty didn't specify how many people were injured or to what extent. Quote, "Unfortunately, pieces of debris fell on some people. We know a few of them required first aid," according to a spokeswoman who was quoted in that quote. "Some people in the area were also highly disturbed by the loud noise," said one resident. "It sounded like bombs dropping in the neighborhood." The artist, who designed the pyrotechnics for the 2008 Beijing Summer Olympics, had worked on the Los Angeles display with an artificial intelligence program designed by his studio. "I'm having AI play a role as my collaborator to help tell the story," he said. Did the AI mind the smoke and the noise? We don't know. And Deadline Mazan, France, the mayor of a French town making headlines for the trial of dozens of men accused of rapes that occurred there over almost a decade, has apologized for comments that appeared to downplay the case. quote, I've been criticized for minimizing the seriousness of the heinous crimes of which the defendants are accused, said Louis Bonnet, mayor of Mazan in southern France. I understand that these remarks are shocking, and I sincerely apologize. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, speaking of AI, just one more story, which begs the question, is this happening in the United States? Dateline Australia. Australia's biggest radiology company has handed over the private medical scans of potentially hundreds of thousands of patients without their knowledge. They've been handed over to a startup company, plans to use the scans to train, say it with me now, artificial intelligence in what privacy experts say is a practice against which the law should protect. This is from the Australian news site, Crikey. Australian healthcare technology company Harrison.ai, of course, says it's a U.S. $200 million company backed by some of Australia's biggest startup and health names. The flagship product is a tool that can read chest x-rays and help clinicians detect observations like collapsed lungs or stents. Company says this tool, along with a similar one for brain scans, is now available to 1 in 3 radiologists in Australia and clinics in Europe, UK, and the United States. Well, that answers that question. It's built using an AI model that was trained on 800,000 chest x-rays, sourced from a, quote, hefty and valuable data set from Australia's largest medical imaging provider, iMed, as well as a handful of other sources, not named. What remains unclear is how this enormous trove of sensitive medical data has been legally used or disclosed by iMed and Harrison.ai. If the radiology company sought consent from its patients to use their scans to train commercial AI models, there doesn't seem to be any public evidence. Patients do not appear to know about it. Even if it did, the company's handling of the data may not satisfy Australian privacy law, which even protects marsupial privacy. No, it doesn't. Experts say it's reasonable to expect Australians would be asked to consent to their sensitive health information being used to train AI for a for-profit company. Quote, one of the issues we have here is that doctors, particularly specialists, have traditionally thought this is their data, that it's their property, and they can do with it what they like, says a privacy expert, Bruce Arnold. What I think is more fit for purpose in the age of AI is that you are custodian of the data. Unquote. I think he was talking to you. Health data is one of the most sensitive types of personal information. The rules around its collection, use, and disclosure in Australia are complex and contested. Generally speaking, patients must give express consent for its use or should have a reasonable expectation that would be used for a purpose like disclosure in case of a life-threatening emergency. The company involved, iMed, did not respond to repeated requests for comment. The company's terms of service for patients says it handles personal information according to its privacy statement, which doesn't state data will be used to train AI or shared with another entity to do so. The privacy expert Dr. Arnold said using patient data to train AI without the patient's knowledge was, quote, ethically tacky, unquote. That could be said of all of AI, couldn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these radio stations, these ones right here, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. The email address for this program, you can email me. I can read them, as well as the playlist of the music heard here on, and your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm still on X. One of these days, pow, right in the kisser. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Changes Easy Radio Network. So long from the home of the homeless.